All right, what is going on, y'all? This is your man, L. Jamal, coming through with another edition of Never Out of Bounds. This is the place where you can say what you want as long as you got them facts. We are in the middle of the week. We are getting to the afternoon hours here in beautiful, sunny Northern California. You know how I do. Not a whole lot to talk about today, but we are going to go back and go over that mass shooting that happened last week in New Zealand. We'll be going over a response to that as well as some NCAA action. Of course, the round one of the tournament is today. It's going on right now. We're going to go over some of the play-in games beforehand that set up the stage for this first round. So we're going to be going over some of those games as well. And then we got some NBA news to wrap everything up. And I will be breaking down what to expect for the next couple of episodes. We'll be doing that as well too. So let's get right into it, of course, like I do with the word on the street. And of course, in response to the mass shooting that occurred in Christchurch, New Zealand, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has decided to ban military style and semi-automatic weapons, as well as high capacity magazines. And of course, like I said, this is response to those mass shootings last week that killed 50 people at a Muslim mosque. We already know that the killing was carried out by a white supremacist. I'm not going to get into all that right now. I just want to get more into this response. Of course, we already know about the shooting. We should know about the shooting by now, who did it, who was involved, so on and so forth. So I just want to get into, her response to that, her response to it, which was, in my opinion, a good response. In my opinion, it was the most adequate response to have. But let's get right into it. The new rule right now would legislation that they're coming up with right now proposes a buyback of guns and also regulation on ammo and weapons in general. I like this quote right here. Actually, the next two quotes I'll give to you guys because it gives you an explanation on what on the exact type of weapon that they're looking to get out of people's hands, at least the regular people's hands, and so there's no issues here. So the Prime Minister went on to say the guns used in these terrorist attacks had important distinguishing features. First, big capacity, and also their delivery. They had the power to shoot continuously, but they also had large capacity magazines. So that pretty much puts explains what they're out there, what they're trying to ban. They're not trying to ban, take away everybody's guns. They're not trying to take everything away from you. But there is a certain caliber of weapon that is being used to devastate and effect, that is being used to murder and slaughter people. So I think they're looking at it from that direction. They're not looking to take away everybody's guns, but they are looking out for a good majority of people's safety. Moving on, I thought this quote was very telling as well, because again, it's more it gives you more of an example of what they're talking about in terms of the weaponry that they're trying to take away. This addresses the key concerns that we have. It's hitting those military style semi-automatics is exactly what we wanted. And this is coming from Chris Cahill, president of the Police Association. And I get it, a cop said it or whatever, but in all reality, let's think about it this way. Now I can get you, if you're in you're a hunting enthusiast, or you're a military enthusiast. Either you're in the military, you served in the military, you know about weaponry, you know about guns. I have no problem with somebody like that obtaining the training or obtaining a weapon like that. That's one thing. Or, some type of rifle for a hunter, all that. Those things I'm okay. Even in terms of domestic houses and just, personal protection, I wouldn't mind a pistol or even a Desert Eagle, semi-automatic pistol, something like that. Maybe a shotgun to protect your home, or rifle again. But I'm just trying to figure out, what do regular people that aren't in the military, that aren't in a police force, what do we need a semi-automatic weapon for? Unless we're planning on going to battle with each other, unless you're in a militia, or unless you're in some military-minded. I'm not too sure what your purpose would be with a semi-automatic. I've been trying to, wrap the question around my head about it the entire time. First and foremost, of course, I can only speak for myself. Such thing as protection and self-preservation. But I don't see where I would need military grade weapons to do such. Of course, everybody has their varying levels of experience with weapons and so on and so forth. But at the same time, again, if you're not serving in the active military, if you're not on an armed reserve, if you're not in the police force, if you're not on a militia force required by a state, then again, why do you need semi-automatic weapons? Why do you need an AK-47? Why do you need an SK? Again, I don't even know how these weapons are made available to people who aren't even serving in any type of active duty military or police force. I think the regular people should be should have a selection of a very tight and restrictive selection based on what our knowledge is and what our experience with fire weapons is. Again, if you're a gun enthusiast, if you know about these weapons, if you know how to use them, that's something different. But not everybody that you're going to come across with all these weapons necessarily know how to use them or anything like that. Now, let me bring up another gun enthusiast do like the, your quote unquote, the hunters and all that. But these guys that they keep, tracking down and all that, they seem to have a varying degree of skill or background with these weapons. Sometimes, they were a part of a militia or they were trained. So there's a lot of nuances here. I definitely get it. But at the same time, I think semi-automatic weapons that can take down 50 people, I think the sales of those type of weapons, in my opinion, should be restricted. I don't think everybody needs to have access to those. I don't think people know, understand the importance of using those type of weapons. If we're talking about a domestic attack, if somebody's trying to invade our country, then by all means, pull out your AR-15. But if you're just, running around your neighborhood, so on and so forth, who needs an AR-15 for that? Who needs an SK for that? Mind you, if you live in a state like Alaska, where you're pretty much out there in wilderness and all that, and you have elks and freaking caribou running around on your goddamn lawn, and you got grizzly bears in your backyard, fine. That's something different. That's completely different. I get that. I get having some high power weaponry to help defend yourself on the frontier, but again, there's diff there's situation, there's context. You living in a city, you living with all these different people. Why would you need, why, outside of personal protection, what do you really need? I mean, how big of an arsenal do you need to have? Think about it. I think that's the biggest question there. And then of course, you have the whole false flag situation that a lot of the right wing people want to put out there, because again, they don't want to give up any type of weaponry. So they're gonna the right wing, of course, is gonna push it and say, well, it's a ban on all weapons. But of course, you keep hearing two words. I've already mentioned them twice here, two different quotes. Military style, high capacity ammo. I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not in the military. I don't need a military style weapon. You can give me a shotgun, teach me how to use it, and I'll be all right. I can defend my family with it. So on and so forth. Teach me how to shoot a pistol, so on and so forth. I don't think the regular Joes like you and me need an SK for SK or an AK-47. I mean, you see what the regular, what regular people in the hood are doing with these weapons. You see what they doing, what these drug dealers are doing, and these shooting that they're carrying out. These are done by high power weapons, just like the mass shootings. So, just like the crazy white guy doesn't need a weapon, the crazy lone wolf, the tortured soul doesn't need a weapon, but neither does the crazy ghetto dope dealer either. Now. Because what he gonna do with his gun? He gonna do the same thing. So I think it needs to come full circle, and I think there does need to be some regulation. Again, regulation is not outright taking your guns away. What it's telling you is you're an average citizen. You're not in the military. You have no military clearance, so you don't need none of that. Take your little pistol, take your little six shooter, whatever you need, your little rifle if you want to go hunt, and you go do that. You know what I'm saying? If you need to protect your family, keep a little shotgun. I wouldn't mind one machine gun possibly, but these got people that have whole arsenals. For what? You're not even living in the woods nowhere. You don't hunt nothing like that. Again, you're not in a militia. So what do you need? What do you need? What do you personally need a surplus of guns for? Nothing. Who's gonna come and get you? Who, really? The government is the only people that had the power to come and take, just come in your house and take your shit, and you ain't got the guns to fight them, really. That's just me. So I agree. I personally agree with some type of regulation here. Same thing. I'm very taken aback by what Donald Trump recently did by allowing people who have been previously, stated to have mental inconsistencies, mental issues, so on and so forth, be allowed to attain weapons. I don't understand that. I don't think people who have who've been confirmed to have, especially if it if some of their issues have led to them harming other people or harming themselves, they should be far away from weapons. Just saying, and that's just the way. I mean, if you already have a something against your record where you've already committed a violent crime, if it wasn't done to self-defense, I'm sorry. I think you've eliminated your chance to own a gun because again, you didn't use it right. You weren't mature enough to understand the importance of it. If you're living in the middle of the woods and you're halfway roughing it, then go ahead. You need a gun to hunt. You live in a lawless, somewhat of a lawless area. You might need to protect yourself. I get that. But again, we're talking self-protection. We're not talking, Baghdad to circa 2003 when we invaded, talking about we're fighting for freedom. You're not living in that situation. So the chances of us really needing these weapons from, in my opinion, are low. Don't get me wrong. There's a you're I mean, living in, certain places. Yeah, you could be a victim of a carjacking any day. But do you really need a semi-automatic to protect you for that? Now, if they have it, I get it. If they have a semi-automatic, then that's the problem. But again, this is why not everybody needs them, and we don't need them in outright circulation the way that they are. Okay, moving on. I'm gonna give you guys a couple more facts on this before I let you guys go. Only 4% in sorry, only 4% of weapons are registered in New Zealand. On top of that, so there's a good chance where, something like this could happen again. Or it could be a retaliation type situation because again, only 4% of these weapons are even registered to people. Now, and it's estimated that 250,000 people own 1.2 to 1.5 million, pretty 1.5 million guns in New Zealand. So, those are two interesting facts right there. That's a lot of guns, and that's a lot of guns not registered. So there's no database. So there's no way to tell, how the gun was attained, who has it really. So those are very serious situations. That does breed a situation where, when there's a situation like this, when there's racial tensions or there's political tensions, it makes it easier for people to carry out these certain attacks, and it makes it harder for those certain attacks to be, in my opinion, investigated because again, you don't have a clear. I mean, you can investigate, in terms of guilt, I guess, in terms of that. But in terms of solving the problem, because again, you don't have a database, you haven't registered any guns, so eventually you're gonna get into a situation where, you have all these weapons out here and all this just drama going down. So I think it's imperative that again. Regulation is the key word here. There's no, and I in the ban, you need to understand the context of the word ban. When they say ban, they're not talking about all weapons. They're talking about the ban on semi-automatic military style. Again, I'm gonna keep stressing it. If you're not in the military, do you really need military grade weapons? No, you don't. That's my opinion. Other people could feel differently. That's just me. But the new law should be in place by April 11th when their parliament meets up again. And licensing rules will also be changed. So the regular gun license, which I believe is an A license out there, that will be for certain requirements or for certain weapons that you might want to attain, you might have to upgrade to an E license, which is definitely harder to get. The process there is a lot more stringent. So the more levels you attain, the more, I guess, the more varying weapons you might want to attain, the more training and more licensing that you're going to have to go through. And I think that's all important, okay? Because again, I don't think just anybody needs to be wielding AKs, whether it's the crazy guy, the crazy white lone wolf, or the black crazy killer thug. I'm sorry. Sorry. Doesn't fit. And in this country, it's the same thing. The terrorists shouldn't have them. Anybody that's trying to just outright murder people and take away people's shit shouldn't have weapons. Sorry, like that. Military style weapons. Really, they shouldn't be having any weapons. Again, weapons should be used for self-defense, and hunting if you need to. If it's not used for self-defense or hunting, then really you're just showing them off, and Yeah, it's a little bit of an overkill in my opinion. I'm just saying that there's only two reasons really to be using guns in this in any situation. That's for self-preservation and hunting. If like I said, if that's what you do, for mass shootings, killing, shooting 50 people every day, shooting 50 people every now and again, no. Shooting at people from a casino window, no. Busting at people in your community for drug territory, no. No, there is a problem with semi-automatic military style weapons, and not just New Zealand, but in many different countries, and it's affecting many people of different backgrounds and races, and it has nothing to do with none of that. And it's a serious issue, and I hope eventually people start to see that. But for now, I'm going to take a quick break, and when I come back, we will be going over some college basketball. We'll be going over some scores from last night. It was the round of the first four, so the preliminaries for the first round. So we'll be going over those scores as well, basically setting the stage for what's going on as we speak. Like I said, as we speak, as of right now, today, we will be going over those scores, the first round scores, I want to say in the next couple of days. So we'll have those scores ready, the scores from today and tonight, and we'll actually have some first round action going on tomorrow. So we'll be covering that in our next episode as well. But for now, we'll be going over last night's action from the first four. All right, y'all, I'll be right back. All right, y'all, I am back. Like I said, I was going to go over some college basketball. And like I said, the tournament is underway as we speak, but I will be going over the action that was the first four. There were two slots that were to be decided over the last couple of days. Two possible 16 seeds went at it, and two possible 11 seeds. Actually, four possible 11 seeds went at it, as well as four 16 seeds. So we're going to talk about those four games real quick, as well as bringing down some of what's going down today. I have no scores right now. The games, of course, are underway. So let's get right into it. It all got started with Fairleigh Dickinson out there in New Jersey getting it done against Prairie View A&M out there in Texas. Two 16 seeds here. Fairleigh Dickinson got the win 82-76. Let's go through these stats real quick. For Fairleigh Dickinson, they were led by guards Darnell Edge. He had 33 points, two rebounds and two assists. Jaleel Jenkins also had 22 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists. For Prairie View, they were led by their guard, Gary Blackston. He had 26 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Devontae Patterson also had 17 points, 8 rebounds, excuse me, and 2 assists. For Prairie View, the game started off really hot for them. They did go on a 14-0 run and ended up outscoring Fairleigh Dickinson 41-34 in that first half. Threes were all over the place. They were living and dying by the three. Chancellor Williams, one of their players off the bench, was having a phenomenal first half. Nothing but threes, like four straight threes to help them out. But again, things started to fall, and they also went 7-10 from three, with a lot of help, like I said, from Chancellor Williams. But in that second half, Fairleigh Dickinson started to pull away. They were really making plays throughout the game. They just weren't throwing up the three as much. They scored a lot of points in the paint. They maintained that throughout the game, and eventually it started to work out for them. They played really good defense, forced a lot of turnovers. For what it's worth, Fairleigh Dickinson did start off that second half with three straight turnovers. But like I said, they were able to turn around, and they eventually went on a 15-6 run, and Jaleel Jenkins was a real big part of that. I think one of the biggest plays for me that I really enjoyed in that game was a transitional play that he was a part of. Prairie View had an easy basket. They had one of their big men make a big easy cut to the basket, only to be blocked by one of the Fairleigh Dickinson defenders. And Jaleel Jenkins takes that rebound and takes it up the court. And just the transition was so seamless. It was a fast break, like a 2-second fast break. He was so quick and so fast, put it right in the bucket. And it was like a 3-point. It could have been 2 points for them. Could have been 2 points for Prairie A&M. But Fairleigh Dickinson made it a 3-point play because when Jaleel Jenkins went up for that shot, he ended up getting fouled. So imagine 2 points that could have went to Prairie View, but it ends up being three for Fairleigh Dickinson. So plays like that were hallmark for Philly. They got a lot of turnovers again, like I said, in the second half. And Prairie View lived and died by that three. They tried to rely on it in the second half, and they made some shots, of course, but it just wasn't enough. Fairleigh Dickinson just rose and just got really alive in that second half again, led by Darnell Edge and Jaleel Jenkins. Darnell Edge might have had the most points, but Jenkins definitely was the fire starter. He led them. He had six assists and four rebounds. I thought he was a player of the game. But this is Fairleigh Dickinson's first win in the tournament, and they will go on to face Gonzaga later on today. Moving on, we also got Temple. Obviously, yeah, Temple, they were able to get past Belmont. I'm sorry, Belmont was able to get past Temple in a battle of 11 seeds. 81 to 70 is the final score there. Yesterday, we had two more games. We had North Carolina Central taking a 4-point loss to North Dakota State in a battle of another battle of 16 seeds. 74 to 78 is the final score there. You also had Arizona State getting it done against St. John's in a battle again of 11 seeds. We're gonna break this one down. For St. John's, they were led by Shamori Pines. He had 25 points, four assists, and also two rebounds. They also got help from CJ Figueroa at 19 points and 10 rebounds, so a solid double-double for him. For Arizona State, they were led by their forward Zylan Cheatham. I've talked about him a lot the past couple of days and just in general during the season. 21 points, four rebounds, and two assists. Lugans Dort, I've definitely talked about him as well. One of the top NBA prospects. So we'll get to some NBA scouting in a little bit with these guys, a little bit further down the line in the tournament, maybe around the end. But let's get to him. He had 21 points, four rebounds, and also two assists. For St. John's, they went 9 of 30 in terms of just shooting in general. Also 3 of 13 from 3 in the first half. So really hard for them to score. Arizona State was the exact opposite. They had a 25 to 7 run at one point. They were just scoring all over the place. They pretty much scored throughout the entire game. There will be periods where St. John's will make it close because Shamori Pines, he has some phenomenal range. He was shooting some threes from almost half court. Figueroa, again, he had a solid double-double. He was making some plays too defensively. He had also made some crucial shots, but again, that offense just was not completely there. They were only able to trim the lead down to just about 7 points in the second half. But and that's just on GP. That's just on Figueroa making a couple plays he can, and Shamori Pines just being able to just to throw it up whenever he could as well. So again, very, very difficult last stretch. I would say the whole month for St. John's as a program has just been very hard. They did not win their tournament. They lost there as well. They did not really have a good showing against Arizona State. Now, mind you, Arizona State is a really good team. They should have won their conference had it not been for Oregon just surprising everybody. They were a favorite to win the Pac-12, so I'm not surprised they were able to pull this one off. But again, St. John's did play some pretty good defense, and again, it kind of made Arizona State look a little beatable. But again, with that being said, St. John's wasn't going to be the team to beat them. Not today, or not yesterday, excuse me. But like I said, I want to reiterate, there is some first round action going on as we speak. Minnesota and Louisville are headed up right now. That was the first game to start things off. We got Yale going up against LSU. Last time I checked on that score, they were getting their asses handed to them. We also got Vermont taking on Florida State. Belmont, who won that playing game against Temple, they'll be taking on the six-seeded Maryland Terrapins. You also got New Mexico State going up against Auburn. Bradley, 15 seed. I'm not too sure where that school is at. It's one of those smaller schools, but they will be going up against the second-seeded Michigan State Spartans. You also got Northeastern going up against number 4 Kansas. Murray State, one of the best smaller schools, one of the best mid-conference teams out there. Murray State, they were going up against the number 5 seed Marquette. You also got Florida taking on Nevada. That should be a good matchup. St. Mary's is going to be taking on Villanova. I think that is a potential upset alert. St. Mary's has been playing good basketball as of late, and Villanova has been a little bit sloppy. Well, actually, they looked pretty damn good going into their conference tournament. Both teams have looked pretty solid, so that's actually a toss up. But I do like St. Mary's, being that it's a local school, so you never know. We also got Montana going at it against Michigan. Old Dominion will be facing off against Purdue. I already mentioned this before. We got Fairleigh Dickinson going off against Gonzaga a little bit later on today. Seton Hall will also be playing Wofford out there in the Southern Conference. I think that's an upset too. I kind of got Wofford. I have not liked what I've seen from Seton Hall the past couple games they've been in. Wofford seems to be strong. They haven't taken too many L's, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe one or two, if they have. And then finally, we have Baylor, the number nine seed Baylor going up against the number eight seed Syracuse. That should be another good one as well. Two evenly matched up teams. Also, Arizona State with that win last night against St. John's, they will be playing. Oh, excuse me. They will. Who are they playing in the first round? They will be playing. Give me one second. Yeah, Arizona State will be playing Buffalo tomorrow. So Buffalo is another actually a surprise team. They finished with a really good record. They ended up winning their conference, that being the MAC, the Mid-American. So look out for that to be an interesting game too. They both score pretty well. All right, y'all. So I'm gonna take one last quick break, and when I come back, I will be going over some NBA news as well, and we will be talking about some playoff standings. All right, y'all. I'll be right back. All right, y'all. I'm gonna wrap this up for today. Like I said, we're gonna get into some NBA news. We're gonna start with a story coming out of, well, we got a couple stories coming out of Phoenix. For one, their forward Kelly Oubre Jr. will miss the rest of the season with a thumb surgery. He's been averaging 20 points, 5.7 rebounds since he became a starter. So that, well, of course, they are out of the playoff, you know, all that racing and all that. So of course, this will give him time to rest. I think he's only gonna miss about 4 weeks, but again, they're out of the playoffs. There's not too much to play for. So actually, maybe a little bit quicker than that, but again, you know, there's not so much they need to play for. So for them, the season is over. They're going to give him some rest. They're going to call it a wrap for him this year. Also, they were able to sign guard Jimmer Fredette to a 2-year deal. For those of you who do not know, Jimmer Fredette was a 10th overall pick in 2011. He spent 5 years in the league. Now, although he was drafted by Milwaukee, he was immediately traded to the Sacramento Kings, and he did some work there, but then he was then traded to Chicago, New Orleans, and then the Knicks. He only averaged about 6 points a game, so of course that was no good. He eventually found himself in China. He's been there for the past 3 years, and he's been an all-star every year that he's been there. And he was an MVP in 2017. Now, I don't know, I can't remember all his stats, but I think he was averaging about 30 points a game, something like that. Of course, this is China. It's not the NBA. But he's definitely, I think the biggest knock on him, from what I was hearing, back after, well, I guess after his first, when he started falling apart, and he found his way outside of the league, one of the main things that I was hearing was that he thought he had a great considerable amount of talent, but in reality there was a lot of flaws in his game, which anybody could have saw that to begin with. But because of his shooting ability, it was overhyped coming out of college. He tended not want to be the type to listen. He was very difficult to coach, and he was not really geared on trying to get his better, and to improve on the flaws that he had. But I'm guessing for his sake that he's taking a step back, and he's used the international experience to do that. So I think it's good for him. I mean, he's now 30 years old. He's had some time to mature. Again, he was drafted in 2011, so he's definitely had some time to play basketball, be around the sport professionally. He's definitely been in the league, so I mean, he understands what's expected of him. I think at this point in time, that's what I'm hoping, that he understands more. He's definitely older. I think he had an okay shooting ability. I just think it wasn't consistent because, again, that's just how shooters tend to be. They're very streaky, and he just happened to be more streaky than the rest, and that was his issue. He was a great shooter coming out of college on the college level. But again, that doesn't always translate in the pros, and you have to learn the hard way. And he did. And for what it's worth, he's now back doing his thing. Now, if you're a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, you're going through some real serious problems right now. Yeah, they're going through some real problems right now. But Derrick Rose, Robert Covington, their small forward, and Jeff Teague, their other guard, will miss the rest of the season with injuries. Covington has already missed 34 games starting on December 31st, so New Year's Eve, with a bruised right knee bone. Rose has also missed four straight and will have an MRI later on today for his right elbow. As for Teague, he's been dealing with a left foot injury since December. There's been some swelling there, also some inflammation, if I'm not mistaken. He will be required to wear a boot. For those reasons, Minnesota has decided to sit those four guys. Of course, we already know that their record right now is 39, I think. I'm sorry, 32 and 39. So they're well out of the range for playoffs contention. So again, they're just looking to not get anybody hurt and just move on to next year. Again, it's been another tough one for Minnesota. Moving on, we're gonna go to these standings. Of course, we're gonna be talking about some playoffs real quick. We're gonna start off with the Eastern Conference as we normally do. First and foremost, we have the Bucks on top, 53 and 19. They are 5-5 in their last 10. Here come the Raptors at number two. They are 51 and 21, 6-4 in their last 10. The Sixers, they are standing here in the third place spot, 47 and 25, 7-3. They recently got a victory against the Celtics, a team that they cannot get a lot of wins with. They were able to beat them last night, 118 to 115. Kyrie had 36 points, and Embiid, though, 37 points, 22 rebounds, all over the place. For what it's worth, and this is something that I didn't know until about, yeah, till recently, as good as the Sixers have looked this year, they have not really been able to take it to the Celtics. The Celtics have won the past 21 of 23 games against this team. It's going to be interesting because, of course, it looks like, well, this is the playoff match I think that everybody wants to see. Although I don't think it's going to happen just this year, but you know, just the rivalry that they have right now, the rivalry that they've been had historically. But this is looking like a playoff series that people do want to see. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think the Bucks might have to go through. I'm sorry, the Celtics might have to go through the Bucks, and the Raptors are probably going to have to go through. I'm sorry, the Sixers are probably going to go through the Raptors. So again, it's going to be interesting. This series has, well, yeah, except for this game, the Celtics have been able to dominate the most recent parts of this series. So it'll be interesting come playoff time. Again, I was thinking that the Sixers were the better team this entire time, but to find out that, you know, Boston controls a regular season series puts things in a little bit more perspective for me. But again, the Sixers have gone 7-3 in the last 10, so it looks like they're going to hold on to that third place spot for now. Moving on to the fourth place, we have the Pacers at 44-28. At five, we have the Celtics at 43-29. At six, we have the Pistons at 36-34. At seven, we have the Nets at 37-36. And then finally, bringing up the rear, we have the Heat at 35-36. Moving on to the Western Conference, of course, we have the Warriors 48-22. They are 5-5 in their last 10. They've taken some ugly L's recently. Right behind them is the Nuggets at 47-22, and I think this is going to be a race up until like the very last day between these two. The very last day of the regular season, I think these two teams are going to be going neck and neck at it. I think the Nuggets have been 6-4 in the last 10, so not so much. There's not going to be any drop off between these guys. At number three, we have the Rockets. They are 45-27, 8-2 in their last 10, so they've definitely picked it up. They definitely surprised me. I consider that I've been wrong about them for a little while. I just thought they were a one-trick pony with Harden. I kind of am reserved to feel that way, but again, they have won. They've gone 8-2 in their last 10. They're one of the faster risers right now. One of the fastest risers right now in the Western Conference. They've jumped up for the past couple. They've been jumping the past couple weeks. I think they were like sixth the last time we went over this, or maybe fifth. They jumped up a couple spots. So I think they've done a good job so far. Bringing up the fourth spot, we have the Blazers. They are at 44-27, my boys. They beat the Mavericks last night, 126-118. Lillard went off for 33 points and 12 assists. CJ McCollum is out though. I'm not too sure how long he's gonna be out. Hopefully he'll be back in time for the playoffs. But we really need him. He's out right now with a knee injury. That's a lot of scoring that we're missing, a lot of potential scoring that we're missing out on. So I miss him. My buddies that are fans, I know they miss him. And hopefully, for our sake, because with the way that the Rockets are playing right now, definitely surprising me. I just hope he gets back. At 5, we have the Jazz at 42-29. At 6, we have another fast riser. They're just winning a lot of games. They're sucking up a lot of games with not a whole lot of time to go. We have the Spurs coming in at 6-9-1 in their last 10. They are 42-30 again. I just hope that CJ can come back sometime before the playoffs, because the Spurs are winning 9-1 like this. They're just going on a tear like this, and just like the Rockets, it's hard. This conference is getting closer and closer. We also got the Clippers coming in at 7, 42 and 30. Sorry, they went 8-2 in their last 10, 8-2 in their last 10 as well. So again, a lot of these teams are on the rise and they're peaking at the end of the season. Again, I'm a little bit worried. Even the Warriors, I think the Warriors should be worried too. I'm just saying, if I'm worried, I know the Warriors. Y'all act like y'all not worried, but I think y'all should be. And finally, bringing up the rear for the Western Conference, we have the Thunder. They are 42-30. Now, this team has not been as great. This is probably been the worst performing team so far in the last few days. They are 4-6 in their last 10. They are slipping, and I don't know the reason right off the top of my head. As far as I know, everybody who is contributing anything major is healthy. So I'm not too sure of the problem with the Thunder right now. They still are there's still a lot to make the playoffs. They're just the eighth seed. So I'm not too sure what the slip up was about. Hopefully they'll get it together and maybe they'll improve their spot. But as of now, they're still in. But for today, we're gonna call it a wrap. My next episode, I will be going over some I've been meaning to do this, but it's a whole lot, it's somewhat of a lot, somewhat some stuff going on, just in general in the world. And just on top of that, I do work, so forgive me. I have not updated you guys on this NFL free agency, but believe me, I am working on that. I will also be having some first round action from the NCAA tournament as well. And also, I plan to have an artist profile ready for you guys. I've been listening to a lot of new music recently, actually music in general, old and new. So I will be having one of those ready for you guys as well. And then finally, if not this week, then sometime next week, I will be having my first installment of my immigration series. I decided to make it a series, immigration in California. I wanted to talk about just a kind of a detailed history of the state that I'm living in right now, the state that I've claimed home for a good majority of my life, the history that I've been able to come across and understand, dealing with immigration and just California. Again, California in general, and I wanted to have my first episode, my first installment on that be about kind of the early history of California. But eventually I want to make it of course I want to talk about immigration as well. So I want to talk about immigration patterns and movement patterns throughout the state and the history of those as well. So it's going to be really in depth, and it's going to be a few parts to it. So it's going to be like a series. So I want to have that either ready for y'all by the end of this week or the start of next week. So look out for that as well. And for now, I'm going to call it a wrap. You guys have a good day. If anybody hasn't told you yet, I love you. Thanks for checking me out. I am on iTunes and Spotify, Never Out of Bounds. Of course, this is your man El Jamal. You can catch me on Instagram and Facebook, so take a look out for me there. And if you would like to donate, I do have a Cash App and a PayPal. So once again, this is your man El Jamal, and signing out. Y'all have a good one. Love you.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.